There is a common experience of which I imagine most of us can speak. It goes something like this. We find ourselves in a certain set of circumstances, and there's something about them that makes us think that we have been here before. There's something familiar about the sounds, something familiar about the sights, something about the smell. There's just something that makes us think we have been here before, or we've been through this before, or we've experienced this before. In fact, we use a term to describe that common experience, a French term, déjà vu. There it is, happening over again. Reading this chapter in Genesis is a bit like that. You see what it's about. Abraham deliberately deceives the people he is among. He deceives them by saying, "She is my sister," rather than "She is my wife." The consequence is that Sarah is taken into another man's home. The consequence of that is that hard things, illnesses, afflictions, come to that man and his household. And the consequence of that is Sarah is delivered from any personal harm and is then released, returned to her husband, who benefits financially from what has happened. And we've heard it before, haven't we? We've heard all of that once before, back in chapter 12. Now, there are certain differences. The king or the man involved was not Abimelech, he was Pharaoh. And the country was not Gerar, it was Egypt. And there are certain differences in the details. But it is essentially, is it not, a very similar story. It's 20 years later. Times have changed. The world has moved on. Abraham has learned so much more. He has grown in grace. He has learned more of God's covenant promises. They are more real to him now than they were 20 years ago. He is anticipating the birth of a son to Sarah and himself, because that's been promised in God's purpose. And this son will be significant and prominent in the unfolding covenant purposes of God for the nation and blessing for the world. Messiah will come through this line. Abraham has grown spiritually. He's matured. He's learned. And yet, here he is, falling into the very same sins, showing the very same weaknesses, demonstrating the same degree of unbelief. Deja vu. All over again. Do we ever do that? Repeat the same mistakes. Fall into the same sins. Don't you wish that you would never repeat those errors and those sins which once you committed? You've been convicted of them. You've repented of them. You've confessed them. You've come to Christ and you have been pardoned for them. And you hope that you will never, ever again in your life fall into the same things. And then one day, you do. You see, what stands out here in this chapter and in this story, this repetition, if you like, in Abraham's life. What stands out is not primarily how we make the same mistakes over and over again. What stands out primarily is the wonderful grace of God. The marvel of God's grace that permeates this whole story. If it wasn't for His grace, the outcome here would be dismal and troubled. Abraham may have lost his wife. His family life would have been disrupted. The covenant line would have been broken. The promised blessing was threatened. But none of it happened. Why did none of it happen? Because of the marvel of God's grace. The grace which works in you and me. And this morning as we look at this chapter, that's what we want to notice in particular. That grace works in unexpected ways. Grace works, first of all, in that grace keeps us from falling into sin. Abimelech means the king is my father. It may have been an official title, we don't know, or simply a personal name. But the important thing about Abimelech in this story is how God in His grace dealt with this man who lived outside, you remember, of the covenant community. He wasn't in the church. But God kept Abimelech from falling into serious sin. Look at verse 6. I have kept you from sinning against me. Abimelech, outside the church, God kept him from falling into serious sin. And He did that by warning Abimelech of the seriousness of sin. The warning could not have been clearer. Sure, it couldn't. God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman." Abimelech, the wages of sin is death. Verse 7, if you do not return her, you may be sure that you and all yours will die. Now, Abimelech did not know the danger he was in. He was quite oblivious. "I did not know she was another man's wife. I was misled. I accepted at face value what these strangers told me when they said, 'He's my brother, she's my sister.' I believed them." And the Lord knew, of course. And so He graciously comes to warn Abimelech of the seriousness of sin. It's true, Abimelech didn't know all the facts. But what remains is this, that if he had gone ahead and taken Sarah as his wife, he would have been guilty of sin which brings judgment. Ignorance of all the facts did not lessen the seriousness of the sin into which he might have fallen. He wouldn't have been innocent just because he was ignorant of the facts. If the vandals pull down the 30-mile-an-hour speed limit sign and they throw it over the hedge and you drive through town at 50, you can't claim innocence. You may claim ignorance, but you can't claim innocence. In fact, the Old Testament law made provision for what are called sins of ignorance. When the people sinned unintentionally, they didn't realize that they were breaking some directive. That could possibly happen. And the Old Testament law takes that into account, and it says, if that happens, there is still the necessity of atonement. Grace keeps us from sin by warning us of its seriousness. How important that our consciences are continually informed by the Word. But grace keeps us from sin in another way, and that is by restraining our actions. You see, something happened here in the household of Abimelech. Some illness, some affliction fell upon them, and so Abimelech was unable to do what he might have done if he'd been left to himself. And you see the indication of this affliction. It's described at the end of the chapter. So something happens here providentially in the household, and therefore Abimelech can't do what otherwise he might have done. What sins we might have fallen into. And what misery we might have brought on ourselves if the grace of God had not restrained us. And often in ways of which we are totally unaware or don't actually perceive. Before you were converted, God restrained you from falling into serious and terrible sins that would have ruined and left a scar. Isn't it so? Why did you not tumble over the edge? Grace restrained you. And since you came to believe, isn't it the same? Why do we not wander off? Grace keeps us from sinning. Secondly, grace confronts us with personal failure. Abraham has acted in a way that's inexcusable. He has deliberately deceived the people he is living among, and Sarah has joined him in this deception. You see, it may have been literally true that they were half brother and half sister, but their intention all the time was to deceive. They thought about it. They thought it out beforehand. They made a conscious decision. And so actually what they were saying was a lie. Because of that lie, they could have led innocent people into serious sins. They could have brought ruin into different lives. Sin never stays within neat, carefully demarcated boundaries. Abraham may have thought, well, it's just me saying this. It's a personal matter, isn't it? She is my sister. That's not harming anyone. That's just me saying it. We hear it all the time. We hear it when public figures fall into serious misdemeanor. And we're told, well, it's just a personal thing. Let's keep that separate from their public responsibilities. You cannot do it. Sin doesn't live in a little box. It permeates and spreads its influence. And Paul says, we can be guilty in that way. We can live in such a way that we entice others to go against their conscience and therefore to sin. So grace comes to humble Abraham, to show him his failures, and grace works in unexpected ways. Because Abraham is humbled by a man who knows far less about the Bible than he does, who doesn't know these promises that Abraham has been given, who doesn't live within the covenant community, but he rebukes the man of God. Someone has said it is a rebuke to Christians when they are involved in wrongdoing, which even the world, by reason of God's common grace, condemns as wrong. What a shame. But a man who makes no profession of faith can quite justly point to inconsistencies in the life of the Christian. I am surprised that you, a Christian, would break the speed limit, would be caught speeding. I am surprised that you, a Christian, would lose his temper. Abimelech comes along and he says to Abraham, "What possessed you? What possessed you to tell us this deceptive word?" Grace confronts us with our failures. And the sad thing is that instead of being humbled, Abraham does what we do. He thinks any excuse is better than no excuse. And so he makes this comment about, well, you know, we'd agreed, actually, we had agreed, Sarah and I, that we would, this is what we'd say. He says, I was a bit afraid of what might happen, and so on. But he needs to face up to his failures. And maybe we do, this morning as well, however hard that may be. Maybe there are some we need to be facing. Thirdly, grace teaches us to fear. Grace keeps us from sin. Grace confronts us with our failures. And grace teaches us to fear. Abraham's excuses here were rather futile and a bit pathetic, really. And he couldn't maneuver his way out of his wrongdoing. But there was something he said which was actually perfectly true. Verse 11. He's talking here to Abimelech, but what he says is, in principle, true. I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Now, his assessment of society in Gerar was wrong, but his principle, the principle he's mentioning is absolutely right. If there is no fear of God in this place, then anything can happen. There will be no standard of morality. People won't see themselves as being accountable. There will be nothing to keep the citizens from doing whatever they want. If there is no fear of God, then they don't have a standard of morality. Marriage will be insecure. So will human life. Property will be insecure. The elderly will be vulnerable. When the fear of God is absent, society is under serious threat. Abraham's assessment of what it's like was right. He was accurate. People lament the rapid slide in our society into lawlessness. And they are totally puzzled. They are totally puzzled. They've all got different theories. And then some of them is a modicum of truth. I meet a little man almost every morning when I'm walking. And he laments society. He's always lamenting what it's like. And he's always got some new story about the latest terrible thing that's happened within Newton Ards. And he always brings it back to the same cause. It's the way they're brought up. And there is an element of truth in what he's saying. But there's something more, isn't there? People lament the slide into lawlessness. And yet, we have cameras, CCTV. We have police with fast cars. and marvelous equipment. We have DNA testing. We have all sorts of things. But it isn't halting the slide, and people are puzzled. But Abraham knows the answer to the puzzle. He says, if society reaches the point where there is no fear of God, then anything is possible. And you are not safe. Isn't he right? And we must pray for our nation that in some way there will be a recovery of what there was a couple of generations ago, the fear of God. And we must live to demonstrate it. And yet, Abraham was also wrong. Because strange as it may seem, in this little corner of the world, where there wasn't a church, and where the people hadn't got the promises that Abraham had, in this little corner, strangely, here were people who did fear the Lord. You see it in Abimelech. Verse 4, Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Abimelech has that consciousness of God as one who is just and who will deal justly with men. He will not condemn the innocent. And you see it in the people too, don't you? Verse 8. When he told them all that had happened, they were very much afraid. They saw themselves as accountable before God. This little corner of the world where there wasn't a church. And they didn't have the Bible. But strangely, the fear of God in some measure was in their hearts. And how can you explain that? It certainly wasn't because of the example of Abraham. How can you explain it? Grace causes us to fear. Do we live with that spirit of godly fear? Do we see in ourselves accountable before God? Do we rejoice that he is just and therefore he will pardon everyone who believes in Jesus? Can we understand the psalmist? Unite my heart to fear your name. Grace works in unexpected ways in this little part of the world where there isn't a church, but people still in their heart of hearts in some measure have the fear of God. And so society is tolerable and possible, and life is safer than it you could ever expect. And there are places around the world, aren't there, today just like that? It's unexpected. But there it is. Finally, let's briefly notice that grace restores us when we fall. Abraham is on a slippery slope. He's guilty of lying. He has put his neighbors in danger of sin. He has dishonored the Lord before these people who need to know the truth. His behavior has threatened the covenant line because if Sarah remains in that harem belonging to Abimelech, how will the promise of the covenant line be fulfilled? What a slippery slope he has got himself onto. How will he ever get off it? There is only one way. Grace will deliver him. He took me from the fearful pit and from the miry clay. And grace did that, both for Sarah and Abraham. Just notice how they are restored. Sarah is restored, and the shame she had brought on herself is covered. Verse 16 says, Abimelech says to Sarah as he gives her these, this is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. It's to cover the eyes. You can understand that. Here's Sarah coming back from Abimelech's house back to her own people, back to her own household, in among her own servants. And they're all glancing. They're all taking a little look. She looked ridiculous in their eyes. What possessed her? They're saying. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable that Sarah would behave in such a way. They're looking. Unbelief and with maybe ridicule. She's covered in shame before the eyes of people. But that shame is covered in such a remarkable way. Grace works in unexpected ways, even to cover up the shame that Sarah has brought on herself. And look how it happened. It happened by Abimelech coming to Sarah and giving her 1,000 shekels of silver. She comes home carrying 1,000 shekels of silver. In those days, a slave could be bought for 30 shekels. 1,000 is a vast amount of money. And she comes walking into the house with 1,000 shekels of silver as a token from Abimelech of the esteem and regard that he has for her. And the eyes of all the servants are covered. And they can't look at her saying, how ridiculous you look. What a shameful person. Because in unexpected ways, God has covered the shame she brought on herself. Grace works in unexpected ways. Love covers a multitude of sins. It hides our failures from prying eyes. Have we brought shame on ourselves by our waywardness, our inconsistency, our foolishness? And God pardons that. But more, He covers over our shame. In the church, when someone who has gone astray is restored, we surround them with our love. We talk to them. We make no difference. Love covers a multitude of sins. In the home, when the wayward son or daughter returns, parental arms are thrown around them. Love and joy are expressed, and the neighbors all know it. And everybody in the street sees that there's no residue left in the heart of the parents against their child. And nobody can have those prying eyes peering into the house. You are vindicated. You are vindicated. What a marvelous word. God pardons our sins and He covers over our shame. Love covers a multitude of sins. Grace restores us when we fall by covering our shame and also by accepting our service. At the very end of this chapter, we find Abraham praying. Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech. How absolutely amazing. In spite of all that Abraham has done, in spite of his failures, he's still a prophet. God hears Abraham when he prays. He gives him the privilege of interceding for others. He restores him to fellowship and to usefulness. Grace restores us when we fall. And Abraham isn't the last to be restored by the grace of God. Move on a bit, David. Move on a bit, Peter. Move on a bit through church history. The list is endless. And come to today, to you and to me. He has not dealt with us according as our sins deserve. They are pardoned, they're carried away, and the shame which they bring is covered because Jesus has taken all of them. Grace works in unexpected, but it always works through the Lord Jesus Christ. And it brings us back to the verse I read before we began. From the fullness of His grace, we have all received one blessing after another.